Okay, we're back in session, and we have a few more. Thank you so much, everyone, for waiting patiently. We had a lot of business today, so thank you for sitting with us as we go through all of our business. I'm going to go ahead and call Araceli Galvez. Thank you.
Thank you. Members of the board, my name is Araceli Galvez, and I'm a West Covina resident since 2002. My children attend West Cove Elementary, and I am here in support of reinstating Dr. Elizabeth Quinn to her position as principal at West Cove Elementary. Under the direction of Dr. Elizabeth Quinn, West Cove has risen in API test scores throughout the years from a score of 737 to last year's highest score yet of 913. West Cove is now among the top three schools in our district. Families from neighboring communities bring their children to West Cove because they want the best for their children. Last year, West Cove was one of the few schools in the district to receive an invitation to apply for the Distinguished School Award. During the process, you may recall that neighboring schools came to West Cove and inspected our classrooms and interviewed our parents, teachers, and administrators. I was one of the lucky parents that got to sit in the interviews and witness all the accolades the interviewers had to say about our school. They couldn't believe what our kids were able to do. Our kinders were reading and writing with punctuation marks. Our first and second graders were writing wonderful passages. They wanted to bring their fellow teachers back to come and see all the great things we were doing at West Cove. And they wanted to duplicate what West Cove has accomplished under the leadership of Dr. Elizabeth Quinn. West Cove School did receive the honor of being a distinguished school, and once again, I was a lucky parent that was able to attend the award ceremony, and I witnessed, as well as Ms. Kaplan, our superintendent, we all celebrated together the accomplishments of Dr. Elizabeth Quinn. I have also served on the school site council for 3 years, and I have had the honor of working with her during that time. 1 year, our school site council was interviewed as part of a 3-year cycle audit, and our school had no findings because Dr. Quinn did her job well in running the council. Personally, Dr. Quinn is both professional and kind. Being kind does not make her weak. It makes her endearing to parents. Her office door is open, and parents come with their questions and concerns, and they talk to her face to face, and she listens. She is a decent human being. In this world of hidden agendas and everyone out for themselves, she remains respectful and honest. We, the parents at West Cove Elementary, respect her and want her to be our principal. We ask you, the school board, let's continue to work together to keep West Cove a school where families from all over want to come and bring their children. Reinstate Dr. Elizabeth Quinn as the principal of West Cove Elementary School. If not, you will be doing a huge disservice to our community and our children. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Galvez. I'm going to do my best, so if I mispronounce this, I'm sorry. It looks like Ali Al-Hussein. Did I? Al-Husseini? Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. I'm really not prepared for this, but I felt compelled and obligated to say something. And I completely agree with Ms. Galvez, whatever she said about Dr. Gwynn, but I'm going to approach it from a different angle. I'm a parent of two children, Zachary and Adam. And I remember my wife coming to me last night, and she told me that Dr. Gwynn was, you know, fired or whatever the term she used. And I remember feeling this a bit upset. And I went to my boys and I asked them, do you like Dr. Gwynn? And both of them said to me, oh, yeah. Oh, she's a nice lady. We like her. And I'm here to speak for them, for the both of them. My experience has been very positive with Dr. Gwynn. From day one, I really enjoyed talking to her. She is professional. She is nice. She's compassionate. Like Mrs. Galvez said, she has an open-door policy. And every time I had an issue, I just go to her. And she listens. She's a good listener. And she cares. And in general, you can tell when people care. It's really visible. And I can sense that. And also, I mean, every time I go to pick up my boys, she's always there. She's always asking about them, how are they doing, asking about us, you know. And I feel the whole experience, I think, is just wonderful. And I really feel sad that the board came to that decision. And I'm here, I guess, just to let you know that it's really a big mistake, I believe, and I mean, my opinion. And I'm not going to go and talk about her accomplishment because Mrs. Galvez, I mean, did a great job, you know, listing all of the accomplishment that Dr. Gwynn, brought to West Cove. As a concerned parent, I hope and pray that the board will reconsider and keep her because she's a good thing. And when you have a good thing, you need to hold on to. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Al-Husseini. Thank you. And I have Frank Strayer.
Hello, my name is Frank Strayer, and I'm the grandfather of two children who attend West Cove Elementary. I'm here tonight to voice my concern and displeasure at your decision to remove Dr. Gwynn as principal of the school effective end of school year. It is my understanding that the board feels it does not have to make public its reason or reasons for this action. I do not agree. I would remind you that as elected officials, you serve at the community's pleasure. And your lack of forthcoming and transparency is troubling to me as a citizen. My concerns in this matter are twofold. First and foremost, at how it affects the quality of my grandchildren's education, and secondly, what I perceive as an injustice to a person that I feel as an able and capable administrator, a commodity we as a community are in short supply of. From what I have been able to ascertain, she has been made a scapegoat for enduring such things as nepotism, egotism, and political agendas. You offer no explanation for your actions, and your lack of transparency leads me to believe you are hiding something. As a citizen, I do not intend to stand idly by and let this happen. I have alerted various news media outlets as to how I feel what I think is going on. I intend to use all available legal forms of protest, such as public pressure, the petition process, the media, letters to local and state officials, Sacramento, and if necessary, the recall process to fight this action. I do not consider myself a troublemaker or a rabble-rouser, but when I see injustice perpetrated on anyone, I will use all available resources at my disposal to fight it. Dr. Gwynn has raised test scores, seems to have the support of a majority of the teachers, staff, and parents, and has dealt with staff members for whatever reason their relationship to any member of this board may be. Instead of using her as a scapegoat for problems you perceive she has in handling staff and teachers, I suggest you start from the bottom up instead of the top down and help her correct the problems that may exist. You should support her and help her, not punish her or blame her, and put aside any personal interests or political agendas you may have. The manner in which you are doing your jobs is questionable and suspect at best. I will do everything in my power to make sure you are held accountable. In my opinion, you have failed the people of this community. We are all human, and none of us is perfect. I ask you to consider what I have said and reverse this action. If you do so, my opinion of you will change 180 degrees, and my faith in human relations and human nature will be restored. If you don't, then I have only three words for you. Shame on you. I await your response if necessary. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Mr. Strayer. Thank you, everyone, for coming and addressing the board and voicing your concerns. We appreciate that. We really appreciate hearing from the public, so thank you very much. We are going to move on to the next section of our board agenda. You're more than welcome to stay, or if you'd like to take this moment to go ahead and take little ones home so they can get homework done, that's fine, too. Okay, we are going to move on to the business section of our agenda. All right, is there anybody who would like to add or remove items from consent?
I would like to remove item 2 and item 10.
Item 2 and item, I have a new page, item 10. Okay, is there anyone else who would, let me see, I think there was something I wanted to. I wanted to add item 4. Oh, no, sorry. Where was my, sorry. Let me see, let me get to my next page, maybe. Yes, how did you know? Item 9. Any objections? Okay, add 9 to consent. And 8 has been amended. Yes.
Okay. Actually, so has number 10.
Yeah.
Well, it's not for consent, but if we're going to approve the agenda.
Okay, is there any other? Okay, so who will move with removing item 2 and 10 from consent? Adding item 9 to consent and the revision of 8 and 10. Who will move this?
I'll make that motion.
Okay, Ms.
Second.
Poulos has. Okay, so Ms. Poulos has moved and Mr. Cox has seconded to approve the agenda and consent items, with item number 2 and 10 being removed, item number 9 added to consent, 8 and 10 have had revisions. For the regular meeting of February 26, 2013. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? This carried 5-0. Okay, item 2, Ms. Schumacher.
I just removed this because due to family circumstances, I had to leave early, so I was not here for the majority of the open session, so I will be able to leave.
Okay. Okay. Who will move the minutes of the meeting?
I will.
Okay, it has been moved by Ms. Poulos, sorry about that, Ms. Poulos, and seconded by Mr. Cox to approve the minutes of the regular meeting of February 12, 2013, as presented. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay, it's carried 5-0.
No,
I'm sorry,
abstain.
Sorry, 4 and 1 abstention. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I didn't hear any no's there.
Yeah.
It's not a no.
Sorry. You abstain too? All right. All right. All righty. Sorry about that. All right. So it was carried 3-2, 3 ayes, 2 abstentions. Ms. Shoemaker and Mr. Spence abstained. Okay, on to item number 4. Okay. Ms. Shoemaker, we'll go this way. Do you have any feedback for item 4, BPAR 5117?
No.
Okay. Mr. Spence?
No.
Okay. I'm sorry.
No.
Ms. Pools?
No.
Okay, Mr. Fox? Okay. I'll start from my left. BPAR 7214, general obligation bonds. Mr. Cox?
No.
Ms. Poulos?
No.
Shoemaker? Okay, BB 9320, meetings. Shoemaker? Mr. Spence?
Actually, this is a question I had with the superintendent. I'm not sure if it's this policy or the next policy, but when we see the notice, some of the revisions were going to be done based on the Attorney General opinion. Is that actually the next one for the closed session? Or does it include the meetings? I think it's probably the next one, but I don't know because it doesn't say which ones are being informed exactly. Because of the
change, the meeting one, the updated due to the change in BB 9321.
Okay.
Yeah,
so I guess
the legal reference on BB 9321 of the agenda.
Yeah, and which part? Yeah, which part is that?
Is that part of the legal reference? I wouldn't be able to tell you which one is changed based on that.
Well, yeah, that was my question because.
No, it applies to 9320.
Oh, okay. So the changes in 9320 aren't related to the AG part. Then I can wait until the next round to talk about the Attorney General's meeting.
Okay. Any other
no.
on this side? No. Okay. BB 9321, closed session purposes and agendas.
Well, my question on the Attorney General opinion is we made changes in our policy based on an Attorney General's opinion. And I guess I'd like to know exactly which those changes were because an Attorney General issues an opinion, it does not become law. He's not a dictator. He's the Attorney General of the state of California, but I've seen Attorney Generals, once there's a different one in there on the same exact issue, write a completely different opinion. It's basically asking an attorney to give their opinion while it has a little bit more clout with the court. It doesn't have to make it become law. It's not necessarily something that's set in stone. And so I'd want to know what changes we made to our policy based on an Attorney General's opinion. Because it's, I don't know which ones they were. What part of this is ever changing because the Attorney General had an opinion?
I wouldn't be able to answer that. I'm not sure any of the changes were based on the opinion as part of the legal reference, but tell you which specific change was related to that Attorney General's opinion, not related to the code. I'd have to look at each change.
Because
none were referenced in our documents.
From CSBA?
From CSBA as.
Maybe they can. Maybe they can tell you. CSBA maybe, but I mean, I'd like to know. It doesn't have to force a law, and so before I adopt something, I'd want to know what the Attorney General, what particular parts will change because of.
You want us to
research that? Well, yeah, have CSBA do it since it's their policy. They're the ones that should know. Because just because the Attorney General issues an opinion, it's not law. He's not a dictator.
Looking at most of the changes here, and they're all referenced to the actual government code.
Mm-hmm. Well, not all of them, though. Okay, well, you go to 4X, I think. Well, you referenced the code. That's where I thought maybe some of this was. But I don't know. That's the question.
The code is referenced at the end of the paragraph on the change. That is where the change.
But the change may reference the code while still having been an interpretation of the code from the Attorney General opinion. So unless the government.
Look at each one if that's how we're looking at it.
Because unless.
I know on page 4X, these are.
Well, unless.
We dealt with it strictly in wording from the code.
Yeah, but unless it is exact wording from the code, it most likely came from the Attorney General's interpretation of the code. So it may have some of the language, but.
It
have CSB ages since it's at home.
I think I thought it'd be quicker, but okay, could be. Look at that.
Man, I just want to know. I just want to know we're changing based on current general.
Okay. We'll reduce that. Are you back in the
second week? Okay. Okay. Thank you. Any other, Ms. Shoemaker?
Under on page 4B, under pending litigation, it says the board may hold a closed session to meet with the board's legal counsel to confer with or receive advice regarding pending litigation, which, if discussed in open session, would prejudice the board's position in the case. For this purpose, litigation means any adjudicatory proceeding, including eminent domain before a court, administrative body exercising. Okay, so my question to you is, in a case where we have pending litigation and, let's say, have a court hearing that all of the board members have to be at, are we required to notice that we will be meeting to discuss these issues, to discuss a pending litigation issue? So does the Brown Act, or is it sufficient that it's a public, you can go onto the court's website and see that there's a hearing in a pending litigation case.
I know Judge Hokey said we didn't have to, but.
I would say I don't believe you would have to notice that at a Brown Act meeting, but.
Because, I mean.
I wouldn't be able to reference.
It says litigation means any proceeding before a court, yeah. And so.
Maybe we can get it in terms of.
Ms. Shoemaker, what page was that?
4B.
B, thank you. I thought it was.
I mean, I'm sure that's exactly what the government code says. My, like I said, my only concern is I'm sure there's probably some caveat somewhere, some subsection that says, you know, if it's a notice court proceeding, it doesn't apply, but I just want to be sure.
Under not subject to the Brown Act on page 14, it says any hearing, meeting, or investigation conducted by fact finder or arbitrator. Does that
follow or
what?
Or any meeting or mediator with either party or both parties to the meeting and negotiation process?
Mm-hmm. It might. I just would like clarification.
Okay. I would say please.
Because that section is under negotiations and collective bargaining. It's not under pending litigation.
Right.
And so I would think it is regarding negotiations and meeting with the unions and mediators regarding those types of negotiations.
Okay. We'll get you an answer. Okay.
Okay, thank you. Okay, who will move this to accept for first reading?
I'll move for first reading.
Okay. Who will second?
I'll second.
Okay. So it has been moved by Ms. Poulos and seconded by Mr. Cox to adopt the following board policies and administrative regulations as presented for first reading. BPAR 5117, BPAR 7214, BB 9320, BB 9321. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
Okay.
And it's as it applies to BB 9321.
Okay, so 4.
There's really no way to say the others are fine.
Four, 1, and the no being Ms. Shoemaker. Okay. Okay, item number 5, California School Board Association Delegate Assembly Ballot.
I would move that we cast our votes for Eileen Moreno Jimenez and Christina Lucero.
Okay, I was, thank you.
Second that.
Okay. Okay, any discussion, any questions? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed?
No.
Okay. Carried 4-1. Thank you, everyone.
I did notice that the ballot had a place for write-in candidates.
Yes, it did. I noticed that, too. Thank you. Okay. We are on to item number 10.
Eight. Do we need to talk about it, or is that just a note that it's been changed?
We've we've noted that it's been changed, but it was on consent. Okay. So we are on item 10, Ms. Shoemaker.
Okay. I have... I have no problem moving it as amended, except remove ID number WC072034 from the separation list.
Mm-hmm. I'll second that.
Okay. Okay. So it has been moved by Ms. Shoemaker and seconded by Mr. Spence to remove ID number WC072024.
To approve the whole list.
I'm sorry, to approve the whole list.
Minus that.
I'm sorry, let me start over. It has been moved by Ms. Shoemaker and seconded by Mr. Mike Spence to accept the entire list. However, to remove ID WC072024. Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay. It is carried 5-0.
I'd like to move that separation of ID WC072024.
Okay.
I'll second that.
Okay. It has been moved by Mr. Mike Spence and seconded by Mr. Steve Cox to separate ID number WC072024. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay. So was that a 5-0?
No.
No. Ask for abstentions.
I'm sorry?
Ask for abstentions.
Oh, and are there any abstentions?
Yes.
So there's one abstention and four ayes. Okay. Okay, thank you. We are now on to item number 16. I turn this over to Ms. Kaplan.
Okay, give you a transportation update, what we want to do. One of the things we want to look at, we want to start with our general education routes that we have right now, and I know there was a request in the past to look at who's riding our buses now. Are the kids that are riding the buses, are they riding it according to board policy? Might that be a way to eliminate some buses? If we find out some kids are riding buses that shouldn't be riding buses, so we're going to look at that in this report. Look at the number of eligible riders per school. We're also going to talk about a proposed start time for next year. One of the things in the transportation study that was done recommended maybe realigning some start times to maximize the amount of schools that bus drivers are driving to. So we do have a proposal for that, which we'll discuss it tonight, information, and then bring it back at the next board meeting for the board to consider. And also in doing so, I want to kind of highlight, I've talked to principals out at the schools with these changes. What are the potential impact on students in schools if we go forward with the recommended changes in start times? So on slide number 2, I looked at the elementary schools. And what I did is figured out, okay, this is currently at California, we have 2 buses, and the number of students that they're transporting a total of 80. Now, all of you know this, but it's worth mentioning, California and West Cove, when those schools were reconfigured, transportation was provided for those schools. So that's why you have some students that are not eligible, the 48, that were kind of grandfathered in under that agreement, whatever you will, to transport those students. So there's not too much you can do there. Cameron has a total of 64 students that ride the bus. You can see that there's 13 students that are not eligible. We went student by student on MapQuest and said, okay, where do they live? Are they beyond the 3/4 mile? Or are they beyond the 1.5 mile? 13 are not eligible. You could say, don't ride that bus, but you're not going to be able to eliminate a bus. You still have one bus. So there's room available on that bus. If you look at, yes?
Are you saying it's because they live outside the area or because they're 4th through 6th grade?
In order to qualify to ride a bus for grades 4 through 6, you have to be beyond, I believe it's 1.5 miles. Okay, so maybe they're 1.2 miles away, but they're still going to the bus stop and they're riding the bus. There's room on the bus. At Merced, there's a total of 28 students. You can see there are some riders that are not eligible. You could say you don't ride, but you can't eliminate a bus. At Merlinda, 60 students, lots of non-eligible students there. Monta Vista, this one, there's two buses, quite a large number of almost 70 students that are not eligible. And one of the things that we looked at was they're crossing Pacific, and just because maybe they're in walking distance, we also look at what intersections are they crossing, are there any safety issues. But that is one that could be a potential to look at in further study, possibly to reduce a bus down to one. At Orangewood, there is one bus transporting the 36 students. Vine, right now, currently three buses are transporting 79 students. And the reason for the three buses, and keep in mind a bus can hold 70, 80 students, it has to do with the route, the geography, that it covers such a large area over in that part of town. So one of our recommendations is to get that down, to reduce that, instead of having three big buses. And then, of course, West Cove with one bus. So all in all, for the elementary schools, 12 buses, and you have your eligible riders. The not eligible riders, out of the 489, there's almost 200 that are not eligible. However, there's room on the bus, and so we continue to transport them. What I want to look at is we're proposing some routes for next year, and I wanted to try to show you what it means. It would be great if every school could start at 8 o'clock, but that means if I'm a bus driver, I can only go to one school. To optimize and to maximize your bus drivers, you want them to go to as many schools as possible. That means spreading out start times, and that we have limited times in the morning. You don't really want to start much before 7:30, and you want to get the kids in by 9 o'clock. And so currently, for the AM routes here, we have 5 1/3 general ed bus drivers. We have three of them that service three schools. We have two drivers that service two schools. And then we have one driver, the dispatcher, who does one school in the morning. Our goal is to try to get a driver to do three schools and not two schools. In the afternoon, we have six special ed bus drivers. One serves five schools throughout the day, two serve three schools, and three serve two schools. Our proposal for next year would be able to, we could go from 11 1/3 bus drivers down to 10, which is a reduction of a bus driver in the morning. Still provide the same ridership, still provide the same service, and get the kids there to school safely on time and reduce one bus driver. This is what it looks like. It's kind of colorful. This is our current routing. And just to kind of walk you through this, and then the rest fall into place. That general ed in green number 4, that is a bus route. That's if you see it large, that's a large bus. What happens there is that bus picks up the first students at 6:50, drops them off at California at 7:05, and then if you see where in the middle there under Cameron, 4 general ed, they then drive over, they pick up the kids in the neighborhood that go to Cameron, they drop them off at 7:45, and then they proceed to go pick up kids at Vine. That's kind of how the routing works. again, our goal is to try to maximize, get bus drivers transporting as many kids as possible. So the current situation, we have 11 and a third drivers in the morning. Our proposal for next year would be to go to 10 in the morning. Okay, 10 bus drivers. Now, I'll jump ahead a little bit, and how does this happen? It happens by changing two school start times. And the two schools are first taking Merlinda, going from 7:45 to 7:40, so 5 minutes earlier, and looking at Walnut Grove and going from, I believe they're at 8:09. No, they're at 8:11 now, taking them to 8:20, taking them 9 minutes later. Let me go back to the previous slide, if I can. Right, 8:11, so taking Walnut Grove from 8:11 to 8:20. In doing so, it's pushing the schools farther apart, which allow more time in between to transport the students. And in doing this, we can reduce the need for one driver in the morning. When we look at the PM, currently in the PM, we use 11 drivers. And so what we're proposing to do in the afternoon is to go to 10 and one-third driver. So you can reduce another driver there, where the dispatcher would do that one route in the afternoon. So all in all, reducing transportation by one bus for next year. And this is the way the routes work. Be more than happy to go if you have questions about any individual routes. Proposal change Merlinda to 5 minutes earlier, where they would then, instead of going starting at 7:45 and being out at 1:53, they would start at 7:40 and be out at 1:48. And for Walnut Grove, instead of starting at 8:11 to 2:58, they would start at 8:20 and be out at 3:07. And then the recommendation would be to maintain the bell times at all of the other schools. Now, there are some other small impacts with pickup times, as far as some of the other schools whose bell schedules maintain, but we're going to look at when students are picked up. And for example, at California Elementary School, we think we can reduce from two buses down to one bus, maintain the same ridership, and then the pickup change, some of those students who were normally picked up at 7:05 would be picked up at 6:48. There's already a group that's picked up at 6:50. It would be a change for those students. Normally they're picked up at 7:05, now at 6:48. We would notify these, you know, these would take effect next year, and we would, you know, this question?
Oh, I was just looking at the smaller buses, and I'm assuming that's the special ed buses.
Yes.
Hall and Crest.
Which slide are you on, if I can?
I'm on slide 5.
Okay.
And the one at Hall and Crest, school doesn't start until 8. Those students, or at least one student, is being picked up at 6:32. Uh-huh. I mean, that's a big difference. I know they have to be there for breakfast.
Uh-huh.
But
they don't have to.
Uh-huh. Well, okay. If you want your child with special needs to get on the bus, there's a possibility, and they might not be able to walk independently to school. They're having to be picked up at, am I hearing this right, at 6:32 and school doesn't start until 8?
Right, because, and according to this, under the one that we have right now, is this, you're looking at 4, or you want to go to 5? Go to 5, same
well,
thing here.
Yeah, I don't think it changed.
That one didn't change, but what happens is they have a number of students to pick up, and once they get them all picked up, they drop them off there at 7:20 at that school, because they then need to proceed over to West Cove on slide 5 and pick up those kids to get them dropped off by 7:45 because school starts. So that is the time, yes, they're dropped off at 7:20. And I believe that's the way the current system is now.
I didn't realize that they were getting on the bus so early for a start time at 8 o'clock. I knew they had to get there for breakfast. but I didn't know they had to be there at 7:20. So they're there for 40 minutes, and they might not even qualify for free and reduced lunch. I mean, breakfast.
Might not qualify, but they're still able to purchase the breakfast.
But it might not be something that the parent could afford, and they'd rather feed them breakfast at home. But they're not given that opportunity.
And the reason it starts at 6:32 is the number of students that have to be picked up and then dropped off. You know, if there was one student, that would be different, but the number of students that have to be picked up on that route to drop them off by 7:20 so they can get rerouted and get over to West Cove.
You might get to this later, but as we take back more and more special education students, I hope their time doesn't get earlier and earlier. I mean, because I think that this is very difficult. And you might be talking about a child that has special health care needs. So are you, how are you looking at that?
And with special ed, you know, what you start the year with special ed on your routing is not what you end with, because students, you're right, they do have different needs. And so we are in the process right now of gathering the names of the students who were proposing to come back to West Covina and look at routing them. So this is proposed for 13-14 based on what we know now. But some of them we may be able to incorporate into these routes. We may have to add additional routes. We'd have to do that no matter what we do. But we're going to try to incorporate them in while still being sensitive not to drop kids off too early at school. So we'll look at that on an individual basis.
What about too early to be picked up? Is there any limit on that? Or if we, or could we see that even move before 6:30?
I don't think we've ever gone to picking up anybody before 6:30. I don't think we have any times before that.
Picking up people at 6:30.
Yeah, that would be the earliest. There's a couple on there, but typically you're in the 6:45 range to 7:00.
It's mostly the special education students who are having to be picked up that early. The children with the most needs are the students that are having to be picked up the earliest.
And one of the things about the special ed routes, and it's just the way they are, the general ed routes tend to pick up and stay in one location. There's two or three bus stops. Special ed routes are much more individualistic and depending on the needs of the child. So it can be more involved.
Well, I don't see that here. It looks like we're trying to eliminate.
The net effect for next year, if we had to add a bus and we go through these changes and the net effect, we might have to add one back. So the net is we didn't eliminate anything. However, if we don't do the steps that we're talking about, it won't be a net zero. It might be we have to add another bus. We have to go from 12 to 13. And so we're trying to make things as efficient as we can in the event that we have to add another bus. You know, possibly we made things more efficient, we reduced here, and we know we're going to have to add one, so we put it back. I'd like to highlight some of the changes in the pickup times. And at Vine, we talked about replacing one general ed bus with a special ed bus, a smaller bus that can still pick up the same kids. So instead of having three big buses run around those hills out there, it would be two larger buses and a smaller bus picking up the students. Monta Vista Elementary School, that bus pickup changed from 6:40 to 7:00. So that one actually goes in a more positive direction. And we already talked about Walnut Grove and the bus pickup times there. At Cameron, at 2 p.m., two afternoon special ed buses would be consolidated into one. And the last drop-off time would change from 2:30 to 2:43. And Orangewood would actually be a little bit more efficient. Those students would be picked up from school in the afternoon on time instead of the way our system is now. Sometimes that bus doesn't get there till 9 minutes after school is out, just based on the availability of bus drivers. And Merlinda, we're looking to start them 5 minutes earlier. So those are the main impacts on students, on the different schools. So we're bringing this to tonight as information, is a proposal to look at bell times at Merlinda and at Walnut Grove. We'd bring it back to the next board meeting for the board to approve the bell schedules for 2013-14. We will continue to look for efficiencies. Do we approve bell schedules? You approve calendars, yes, but not so much bells. Any bell schedule changes?
Well, that was because we weren't in compliance.
Okay.
That we don't normally, every year we don't, you know, formalize the bell schedules.
Change.
Bell schedules.
If...
But I bet you they've made lots of bus schedule changes since that time. I don't ever remember seeing that. You know, we don't approve them on a regular basis when we change start times.
If staff wants to do a report that says that, you know, these schools have changed their bell schedules and they're in compliance with what they're supposed to be, that's fine by me.
Okay.
We approve that. Okay. I was here for that.
I did. I did have some questions.
Mr. Spence has the floor right now.
I don't understand why we're not talking about eliminating all 13 routes. Because
there's not 13 general ed. You mean
buses.
When you talk about the so 4 or 5 general ed bus drivers, but they do 3 schools.
There's 292 eligible students total, and that comes what? That's like $10 a mile. You know, and for sure, we might as well just give them taxi vouchers. There's only 18 kids. Them taxi vouchers rather than a big bus rumbling around West Covina in order to, you know, pick up 18 kids. I mean, to me, you know, it's money that we're wasting that can be better used as part of our cost savings rather than some of the cuts that are going to come. Because when you look at the list, like I said, I mean, it's about what, $8, $9 a mile?
Actually comes out on the home-to-school transportation. We spend $525,000 to transport. Well, you've got those elementary kids here, but you also have the Monta Vista kids. You probably have, or the Walnut Grove kids, you have about 680 students. So if you did the 525,000 divided by the 680, you're around $700 or $800 per student per year.
Could you maybe include in a packet the board policy that allows us to do the Walnut Grove transportation? Because our board policy does not allow transportation at the middle school level.
Was that one of the agreements? And
it was approved. It was approved in violation of board policy. We never changed the board policy.
If people are coming from north, because students are coming from north of the freeway.
Idea. But we never. Our board policy says we cannot transfer at the middle school level. That's what our board policy says. I'm for eliminating elementary school transportation. I mean, 260 kids, and that was not on a rainy day, because on rainy days, the attendance is even less, because people find a way to drive their children and drop them off, not at a bus stop and wait for them, but actually at the school, because we're not Hemet Unified, where, you know, you have to go from Idlewild and all these places around. I mean, we're pretty compact. I mean, look at the numbers of kids.
Merlinda is my home school. I walked it with a 4-year-old. And it took me 24 minutes. Now, it wouldn't be much longer, I mean, you know, because they have shorter legs, for a child with, and she was tired by that time. That, if you're eliminating that,
And there's no way I'm going to be able to walk her with her bike because I'm not going to be able to take the bike back. But I wanted to see how long it would take from my home. And so if you eliminated that, you have, and I'm sure there's children that would have a further walk than I have. Now, I know I live from Melinda, probably as far out as you can live to go to that school because I live really close to the boundary. But that's a long walk for a kindergartner. And then if there was not a parent that accompany that child, you have to walk all the way down Merced. That is a very, very busy street. So, and then there's, you have to walk down to Belinda to, but there is a crossing guard there. But it is, there is no easy way to get to school. And if you did try to take the side streets, which you could take one side street a little ways, you're gonna, it's gonna add time to your walk. So when we're looking, if that ever comes to where we're eliminating transportation, I want to know how long those children are going to be walking and if it's a, if there's a safe route anywhere for those kids to get to school unaccompanied, because there will be parents who won't be able to accompany their child to school.
If you look down a bus on a rainy day, there's no one there because they don't have a way down in the rain if the bus stops. Somehow they managed to get them that extra little bit to the school from where they're at. And when you look at the numbers of kids that we're actually serving, 292, I mean, to me, it's a waste of money to continue on with our general education. And you're not counting a capital cost of having to replace buses at some point, those kinds of things. I think we should eliminate all of it. But Walnut Grove...
And could those kids get to school, those 200?
Hmm? Well, it's good, those 200.
I would also want to know, like
there's
a survey, could they get their children to school? Well, I saw on pouring, raining days, I've seen people walking their kids to school down Merced.
There's 10,000 students that get managed to get to school. We're talking about 260, 292. And, you know, again, if...
souls, wonderful children that we want to make sure get educated.
Yeah, 292. Yeah, we want to make sure they get educated. And then you got to have money because when they get to the school, they're going to have cuts instead because we're funding transportation for 292 kids. And, you know, I just don't, to me, it doesn't add up the amount of money that's there. And we can eliminate Walnut Grove if we would just follow our board policy.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask a clarification. Are you asking us to bring an agenda item to you to vote on for that?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Follow board policy.
Well, I would like to eliminate. I doubt the rest of the board wants to eliminate. I don't know where the rest of the board is. I'm just saying I'm willing to eliminate it all. All the general ed stuff. Because when you see the numbers, it doesn't add up. And we can serve kids better. I said give them taxi vouchers and that will cut it costs.
Well, I guess I'm asking, is there
Well, I think the first thing is to see this updated with Walnut Grove eliminated, because then that's following board policy. Currently, board policy states that only the elementary students get coverage. So then what does that do to our financial figures?
So you'd like to see the Walnut Grove routes eliminated, and how would basically do our routing without Walnut Grove? And what could we reduce by doing that?
What would the savings be? What would be?
What would be the cost of following board policy? Yeah.
Historically, I'd like to know when we consolidated to one middle school, were the middle schoolers on the north side of the freeway transported to Edgewood at that time? I wasn't, when they consolidated schools, I wasn't on the board. But I wonder if it happened at that time.
They probably did because we had, because we changed the board policy to eliminate middle school transportation. So there was a middle school transportation component. So I don't know if the north, I don't know if the, I don't remember what the miles were, but there was I don't have the answer on the north side, but there was transportation provided to Edgewood Middle School when it was just one middle school, at least for some time. But I don't have the answer on the north side of the freeway thing because I don't know what the mile.
On the north side, I mean, there's some homes up on San Bernardino Road up there that are even busing to Monta Vista, so now it's even further busting to Walnut Grove. I mean, it's 120 to 150 probably.
To Walnut Grove?
They pick up on the backside of Monta Vista, and then the two buses come in.
That's a long ways for middle schoolers to have to get to school.
Right, the students, those students come to the backside of Monta Vista as a hub and then pick them up there.
There's no easy way to get to Walnut Grove from the other side of Monta Vista. When you're looking at, there's not really any natural border or boundary that interferes getting to Edgewood or to Holland Crest. But that freeway is a difficult way to get around. I think there's only two easy ways to get through, and it's still you're not. It's not like the crow flies.
The crow flies. Yeah.
It's you're taking. You have to go a roundabout way to get there. So.
Why don't you just go under Sunset?
But it's still. If you look at it, it's you're not gonna. You're going to be. You're going to be going east.
Yeah, but I mean, the north part. I mean, they can go up further and cut over too. But I mean, but the border, most of it's Sunset, most of that part of the district over there that's ours is, you know, would go down Sunset.
It's difficult. I've known people who've lived over there, and they talked about how difficult it was to get to school.
To get to Walnut Grove or to Edgewood?
It was at that time. It was Edgewood, but Walnut Grove. They told me it's actually a little bit further than Edgewood was for them.
I mean, or we should change our board policy.
Or change the board policy.
But, you know, I'm for obviously not changing the policy.
Hold on.
One more. Okay. I already said the thing about the taxi vouchers, right? Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
Ms. Shoemaker?
I would prefer that we change the board policy to allow the bus route to Walnut Grove. I think that was a large portion of the buy-in for the school to keep sixth grade and to have students go to Walnut Grove was having that transportation available. So I would be against eliminating it. I know Ms. Polis brought up the early pickup times for some of the students, and I had to step out, so I wasn't sure if it was mentioned some of the length of time students are spending on the bus. Because EMS, they're spending an hour on the bus in the morning. And, you know, for Edgewood Middle School, I understand why I had to spend an hour on the bus when I lived all the way across town. I can't imagine where they're being bused from now that would require that length. And then one of the points you mentioned was impact to schools and students. Orange Ridge Elementary students will be picked up from school on time instead of 9 minutes late. I'm not quite sure that that's really going to have any impact because I think the bus is going to wait that 9 minutes for the students to get their stuff together, get out of class, and get to their bus. So I'm not sure it makes any difference if it's there as soon as students let out. And in some ways it may be a negative for the students who need to ask their teacher a question before they come out. So that was really my opinion.
I think we've addressed the transportation issue. I don't know, over the last 20 years, Mike, gazillion times or something of that issue. And lo and behold, after we go through this whole process, we generally find that as a result of the special education requirement and that the differentials are nominal at best in getting rid of it. So I'm not inclined at this time, unless I've got absolute proof that there'd be a significant cost savings, that we make radical changes like eliminating transportation. Anything else? We need to bust him.
Okay, for me, these are all difficult decisions, and I too am concerned about the students getting there so early. You look at Edgewood High School, and they start 10 minutes later than Hollencrest. But yet they're going to be picked up at a much more reasonable hour by the same bus. I'm looking at page 5.
Uh-huh.
So the gray, I'm following the gray. And I understand they've got West Cove over there that they're going to head to. But, those students at Edgewood are not having to catch a bus so early. So that's the toughie. I understand that they're special ed, but it's how our routes are being drawn so that these students are so much earlier than we have Monta Vista. Those are little ones. I would like to see the cost savings for Walnut Grove. It doesn't mean I necessarily support it. I just would like to see that, since we're not voting right at this point. The other thing that I wanted to ask, I know that when the buses... when the buses are ordered, there's a certain number of students that they can hold.
Uh-huh.
But I've been talking to bus drivers, not in our district, but in working with the theater production, and they transport students in. And the constant complaint from every single bus driver is that they don't adequately represent the number of students that actually fit. They'll say 3 fit, but really only 2 fit. And so in turn, it affects... how many buses are being ordered. So I wanted to know if we've created real human numbers, like for the high school students, there's no way you're going to get 3 on a seat. It's 2.
Uh-huh.
And maybe with elementary students, you'll get 3. But that's only really kinder.
Uh-huh.
So I just wanted, since we were talking about transportation and busing, do all of our buses reflect real kid sizes,
uh-huh,
not what the specs are from the bus company?
Uh-huh.
Because I know last year, it hasn't happened this year, but I know last year I got 2 phone calls because kids couldn't get on a bus because it wasn't counted properly. And then that's when it clicked with the theater production that, well, it's probably because the bus states that it can hold 3 adults in a seat. And so the order says, well, this many kids can fit. So the cheer team says, oh, okay, well, we only need 1 bus. And lo and behold, you're talking about high school students that are adult size, that really only 2 can fit.
Uh-huh.
So I was curious if that was the case with our district, if we were creating real sizes.
Uh-huh.
Only kindergartners can fit 3 to a seat.
You know, and usually the standard is, okay, well, it depends on the size, but you get 3 to a seat. You know, one thing to consider is in the morning, not all kids get on the bus at the same time. And so there may be a short period of time where you might have 3 to a seat, but it's not for a long period of time. Okay. That's different. That's everybody gets on and everybody, yeah.
Right, then this transportation issue, but since we're talking about transportation, I just wanted to know if they're real sizes and not the specs that the bus company says should fit in.
Can provide that an update, how we do kind of guidelines, if it's high school, if it's intermediate, if it's, what are we doing? How many are we putting in those seats and estimating? So we can provide that.
Now, on a footnote, it may affect how many students could be on a bus. Like, for example, Monta Vista has 123 students. And maybe the specs are that they really all don't fit. Maybe they do. Maybe they are fitting properly in seats. But for the other schools, well, California's kind of close. But for the other schools, it may not be an issue because there's so few kids and lots of space on the bus. But that was a concern. And since we're talking about transportation, And I've seen, not our district, but I've seen with other districts with the theater program, that the kids don't all fit properly. And I thought, I hope our district's not doing that. Okay, so I think we have an update that needs to come to us. Do you have the feedback that you need from us?
I believe we do, yes. And so we'll go back and look at these different areas, and then we will come back to you.
Okay.
For information.
Are we keeping you up here for our next report?
Sure.
Okay.
The next Academy Award.
Coglin will take our item number 17 on facilities capital facilities projects.
Okay. One of the things that I did, I think we went out in probably November, December, parts of January, is I took the fiscal team out, the business department. We took everyone, child nutrition, fiscal, M&O, transportation, and we, IT, the TIS department, and we went out to all the schools to talk to them, just to touch base with them. How can we be there to support them? And one of the things we talked about was facility needs. And we really stressed, okay, what are things here that you need at the school? What are some things that you want? Because everybody wants things, but what are some of the things that you need? As we know, we I'll just go to this slide. We'll just get right into it. We had a bond election here in this district, March 7, 2000, pass a $40 million bond to modernize and improve school facilities, and that bond passed with more than two-thirds of a vote in favor of issuing those bonds. What was the ballot language? What was it? What did it say it was intended for? It was to upgrade fire and smoke alarms throughout the district, replace 40-year-old electrical systems, repair and renovate classrooms at every school in the district, make health and safety improvements at every school, add classroom electrical outlets for computers, replace deteriorating facilities before they create student safety hazards, repair hazardous deteriorating walkways, provide students with increased classroom computer access, and upgrade classroom electrical systems for modern technology. That was what...
The boardroom. You forgot to model the boardroom.
And
didn't I tell you? I told you. You didn't believe me, did you?
That was the next slide. That would be... it's one of those on there.
You won't trust
me. I doubt it.
And we did that. Just a moment of clarification here before you go on, that one of the reasons is because, as Mrs. Miranda Jimenez told the soccer parents, that in 2 weeks, to give them notice to get the full 3,000 people that are going to be here, so that we got this facility to house all of those people. So to that extent, it was a great move in using bond funds to improve the size and capacity of this board.
So there are some bond dollars left. Originally, the total bond issue, they were $40 million. Through state matching, the district picked up another $40 million. Along the way, they've earned interest. Of course, right now, interest is less than 1%, and so we're not making a lot on interest, but over the life of this, they've made that interest. So the total funding on that $40 million bond with matching and interest was $82 million. Total expenditures to date, $76.3 million. So there are remaining bond funds. There are $6.5 million in remaining bond funds. And we still have needs at our school. And so what we'd like to do is there may be some of the schools... some schools that are still some money out there. We could try to get in line for some of that, depending on the projects. That's one of the things we'd look at. Current facility needs. I'm going to give you the bottom line, then we're going to go school by school, and then have the discussion. We identified current facility needs of $4.5 million. One of the things that you're going to see, we'll go school by school, one of the things you're going to see at all of the schools is wireless internet. probably 10 years ago, was about putting drops in, and we have those in the conduit. Well, now we're talking wireless internet, and so there's a proposal on here to put wireless internet at all the schools. They totals all of the wireless projects total $269,000. That will cover a lot of our schools. If we want to be thinking about one student, one computer access, we're going to need a greater wireless internet capacity. To do that right now for everything would probably be close to about $990,000 or $1 million. So this would be working towards that goal, keeping in mind who knows what the technology does in the next couple years. So that's why we're not recommending all of those funds. Another big issue that's come up is security fencing. You're going to see that at a lot of our campuses. We have some schools that are, people can just walk onto the campus. They don't have to go through the front office. And we went out and identified those schools, how we could reroute the traffic, the foot traffic that comes onto the campus. And so at California, we have wireless internet and security fencing for $9,700. It's like that.
It's eye appealing.
It's aesthetically pleasing. Well, it is hard to climb because there's the gaps. It doesn't have the cross pieces.
It's you know, so people can have a visual appreciation of what it was that we're doing.
Exactly. At Cameron, you see they need the wireless internet, but they have fencing. They're fine there. But all of these schools were touched in some way with modernization, but and that's why I have Dave here. Some were touched more than others. The multi-purpose room floor in that, Cameron really needs to be redone. And also the installation of some cafeteria tables. The bond can pay for the installation of the tables. Child Nutrition can actually pay for the tables. So the cost of the tables wouldn't come out of the bond, just the installation of them.
Why can't the nutrition pay for
installation? That's what they told me. They can't, because the tables move. The tables belong to, when you buy it, it's here. It doesn't become a fixture of that school. So technically, they could be moved somewhere else. They cannot pay for the installation, is what I've been told. It's federal dollars. Merced is in pretty good shape. When we talk to them, wireless internet would be what we need to do out at Merced. In Merlinda, wireless internet, security fencing, and they do have an old portable out there that needs to be replaced. And Dave, do you remember the room out there at Merlinda? Your child's not, you have kids in 17, do you?
Daycare relocatable. Right. So where's the one that needs to be replaced?
I believe it was in the back section on the back of the field area next door to the old YA system.
We'll have to look. What class is in there? That might help.
Monta Vista Elementary School, wireless internet. They're in need of a lunch shade shelter and also which bus pickup structure in the back for those Walnut Grove students, but I guess depending what happens with Walnut Grove students, that might not be a bus pickup structure in the back of the school, but that is on their need list. At Orangewood, wireless internet, their school is fine with the security fencing. Vine Elementary School, the wireless internet, and not a lot of security fencing, but they need a little bit more out there. West Cove, also a lunch shade shelter and wireless internet. Now we're getting into the middle schools and some bigger projects. At Holland Crest, the wireless internet goes up because of the space it's covering. they are in a little bit bigger need of some security fencing. Right now, to get on that campus, there is a gate, but if we're trying to route them through that front office, we'd need to reconfigure that. The parking lot is completely open. There's a gate in the front, but during the day it's open, and then the school's exposed back there. Then the other big project out there is they have what's known as a chiller. And what that means, the way it is operating now is, I believe the school votes on it, it's either you're going to have heat or you're going to have AC. And they take a vote and decide which way they're going to go. So there needs to be an upgrade on that system. It's actually a very efficient system when it works, but it needs some upgrades done to it. And that would total $350,000.
Didn't they upgrade that during the modernization?
Dave, do you remember that?
Yeah, not when we opened it.
Yeah. So then they didn't do anything when they modernized it to the air.
The modernization scope of work for that campus was utility upgrade, some classroom infrastructure, EDA access compliance, fire alarm safety issues, path of travel issues.
Plenty of room up here at the podium, Dave.
Well, they just said we did.
I could sit in that seat and talk on that speaker, too. Walnut Grove, wireless internet at Walnut Grove. Edgewood Middle and High School, I did lump them together. Wireless internet, security fencing on the middle school side. Just as we did it. West Covina High School, their gym. I mean, it's a very large gym and could stand to have the floor and bleachers and the scoreboard.
Did we do the bleachers there?
No.
I thought there was some emergency thing there and we had to do the bleachers there.
We did it the whole
A few years ago.
They just closed them on the visitor side. Mm-hmm. I don't.
No,
that was it.
Right. They,
yeah,
no,
did.
But they.
Did we do something there?
At Edgewood, there was a problem, but they just closed them. I don't think we ever did anything with them.
The other.
Yeah, there's only. Yeah.
They're only on one side, but there was some. I thought we did something there.
We can go back into the. You know, we'll go back into the archives and see what was that was done. So if anything was done.
It was a few years ago, right?
The other thing is the multi-purpose room there, the AC unit, is just needs to be, is it a replace or is it upgraded or is it?
Actually, the system that's there now is actually a boiler system that actually heats the multi-purpose room. It's not an actual HVAC system, so to speak, so it doesn't have a chiller combination. So there's no actual air conditioning in that multi-purpose room.
Wow.
That's what it used to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
We used to get out early on hot days.
Yeah, that's when it was, that's when it was in
it's
those old days when you know, it was a backwards school, and now we're you know,
upset about it.
They let us out early. The only school that didn't get out early was Willowood, because Willowood had air conditioning. And you had to stay in, so then you wished the year were happy that you got to stay in school.
West Covina High School, wireless internet. The media center is just in big need of the carpeting and painting, and also same thing with their multi-purpose room and their HVAC upgrade. And I think the biggest thing in here it was on their list was the football bleacher upgrade, mm-hmm. which totals $1.5 million. And so that was made the list.
I know that they were talking about upgrading the bleachers at the high school and then putting rooms underneath. But this wouldn't include that,
there's
right?
The weight room design thing. Oh no, that's where we're going to move the home side over to the east side. Convert that over. Put two or three classrooms underneath
like
that set of bleachers, and then make the visitors' side the other, and put a press room on and all of that.
Well, they found out the sun would shine on the home team.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're not talking that sort of level, are you? You're just
we're just talking the bleach,
the
bleachers.
Yeah.
Just the bleachers.
We're talking about 1.5. Why aren't we going out to look for the ground? to get that plan revived. What the realistic cost
this is.
Instead of having a situation where we're doing bits and pieces that we're going to have to rip out to do the next bit and piece.
What happened to a two-story sandwich room?
You know, this is kind of the first phase is let's identify the need. The second part would be, okay, let's identify, is there any state matching money? Are there any grants out there? And is there anything we can do? And that's what happened with the last bond, and that's why there's some money left over. And so that would probably be, that is phase two.
I doubt it.
Where would we start in terms of looking at
that? Oh, no. Bottom is Roland drawers or something.
Roland Unified. Okay. Okay. Very good.
And get the discussions from there and what the cost.
Yeah, when we approve the cost.
I can contact a neighboring district where maybe a previous employee used to work. We can look at that.
So the football bleacher upgrade, is that entirely new bleachers that you're asking for?
I believe so.
Yeah, that would be a new set of bleachers to replace the visitor side.
Just the visitor side.
Just the visitor side, and then that would basically convert that over to the new home side.
So you are continuing to do that.
But there's a problem with the sun. Wasn't that because then the home people are going to be in the sun. And I know a lot of people, when they realize that the home site is going to be in the sun,
they don't
start
to
complain. Because it's really hot in there in the afternoon. And I know that seems petty, but all of a sudden when they realize that, it became a real issue.
Yeah, and it might be, and I'm not saying that they would do the visitor side in lieu of the home side right now. That's simply the only information that I was aware of. There was the various options, which was to do the swap to the visitor side location, place building structures underneath it, as well as two-story science buildings behind it. I heard all of these other various proposals. So, you know, this for a baseline stadium, you're looking at about $1.2 million to $1.5 million. So
that's to create new bleachers and switch the sides. That's the $1.5 million.
Either or side. You could replace the home side with a new set of bleachers.
Oh, so the $1.5 million is to only replace one side.
One set, correct. Yeah.
Is there any way to change the jog so it faces the...
When we look at Coronado High School, wireless internet and security fencing, and we look at San Jose Charter, wireless internet and also security fencing out there. Some of their fence that needs to be raised, it's about this high, and so that would be to do security fencing out there.
When they're late for school.
Cortez is another big piece of this as we move towards the special ed take back and the programs there at Cortez. There's some things that need to be done out there to get it ADA compliant, and those automated fire alarms, ADA compliance doors and thresholds, modifying some existing casework, new classroom sinks, restroom upgrades, technology upgrades, comes to about $1.2 million. And as far as that's the total there, as the program's brought back, SELPA's evaluating, you know, is SELPA going to pick up some of those costs?
We didn't modernize that school.
No, we didn't modernize it. But why? So I guess the question is
laws change. When was that school was put in, and when? 50s?
I want to say 1956, 57, something like that.
The understanding is when we take it back, and they start looking at what's going on. It's got grandfathered in under the county, but we're going to
right.
Take it back, and we're responsible. I think
right.
But you saying we may get reimbursed from these offices?
So, yeah, it may be that that cost may be shared by SELPA, but we're still working on that, that funding, that model. What would that look like, and over a period of time, and how long do we have the program there? So that is a possibility.
Anything at Cortez with some cosmetic stuff. So just because that we had a limited funds, and we decided that we weren't going to do anything with Del Norte or Cortez at the time, so they didn't get any the modernization money. Are these, if we just did these few things at Cortez, is it going to look like our other schools, or is it still going to be?
There's a couple phases that need to happen out there. It's still going to be, you know, on the outside looking, it's going to look a little different. This is phase one. Yeah, you're looking at about another $1.5 million to bring up all those other those pieces. Last page, I tried to summarize it, elementary school, middle schools, and high school. Keep in mind, Edgewood is combined there with the middle school and the high school, and you can see, and then total other schools. Total is 4.5. It leaves about $2 million remaining bond funds to be used for possibly some future technology, possibly some more upgrades at Cortez, or other needs that come up at our schools during the next couple of years.
Money to deal with the bleacher classroom issue. For educational enhancement.
It's difficult for me to have Cortez and not get that extra funding.
Mm-hmm.
We're taking back that program. It's going to be our program. And when you drive by that school, it's almost an embarrassment. And is that saying how we feel about the special education students in our district? And I know when it was a county program, we thought, okay, they should step up and make the changes. But if we're taking that back, it's almost like that we have us and them, and that's the other group. And so that's really hard for me to see this extra money and us saying we're going to save it for our technology for our students, when really these are our students and their school is barely, I mean, we're bringing it to compliance, but that's it. That's really hard for me. Okay. It was hard for me when it was a county school, but we were hoping the county would step up to the plate, and they did say that they were going to make some changes, but I think every year it gets worse.
When will you have an answer on what stuff might be able to do?
We'd have to do some research with the state. It has to do with, is the state selling any bonds? Where are we in line? How can we get in line? A lot of times what happens is you put your...
Yeah, are we in line? How many?
you know.
Yeah. 3 years of, are we in line?
Yeah. No, you a lot of times you know, you kind of sign up, you commit to the project, and then
right.
you get going, and then you find out you were funded to 50%. So that's something that we can look into.
That would free up, though, I mean, even if it was 50%, I mean, that would free up funds for some of this extra stuff.
Some of the things on the matching, though, it has to do with what, not every dollar that you spend at a school that's eligible, it has to do with what you do. And so a lot of the matching is on some new construction or some modernizations, which maybe some of these are a little outside of the modernization, but it's something we definitely could look at. That is a grant that we're looking at.
I was just going to bring up, too, is that, you know, they are going to fund a bunch of solar stuff, Prop 39, that just passed. They're looking at doing a lot of stuff with the school stuff.
We have a meeting in just a couple weeks to talk about Prop 39 with someone on that.
Entire super 10.
Yeah.
A little bit higher. A little bit higher. So the purpose of tonight, go ahead, there was a question.
No, I just two things. Mike brought up this field over here.
Uh-huh.
I don't really see it as something that's feasible, but I'm just curious as the cost to make that field. Yeah, the artificial turf for the soccer field.
Okay.
And or whatever utilization. And, you know, there may be some possibilities of uh-huh. city involvement to some extent.
Well, that's also the water.
Uh-huh. So, I mean, it's just part of this whole big major complex that we've got going on here. So that may be something that we want
something
to
look at. Okay.
As such. And then are we looking at Del Norte at all? I mean, do we have any responsibilities? I mean, if we've got the responsibilities with Cortez, then should we be looking at Del Norte?
Good. Del Norte looks good in comparison, and I appreciate ROP putting in that money. I think we need to thank them for investing
so
in that
done
school.
That then? Okay.
I'm
I
not
as
much.
A long time, but
yeah,
I think that was it.
Okay. Ms. Bowles? Nothing more, I think.
Okay. Is she making?
For Cortez, as we take it back, are we looking at our facility use agreement as to what they were supposed to be maintaining, what we were supposed to be maintaining, and what we will be going after them on or not maintaining?
We can go back and look at the agreement and take a look at that.
Okay, for me, here's my question. I was not here, I was not on the board. So looking at the purpose of the bond, I'm looking at your third bullet, which is to repair and renovate classrooms at every school, and then I'm looking at your second to your last bullet, which references computer access. And I know that we've increased the technology in the classrooms.
Uh-huh.
They're using smart boards and docu cameras and more LCD projectors. So we've increased that technological component. But the teachers have said every time I'm there on back to school nights that the sun coming in means the students can't maximize the learning opportunity because they can't see.
Uh-huh.
And so some of them have been creative to tape up construction paper. I'm sorry? Yeah. So can we use some of the bond money to address that with only certain schools, certain classrooms? It's not the whole school.
Uh-huh.
I know for sure California is one of them. I know who was the other one? There were like three schools. So looking at what our original intentions were, does that fall under? Because the technology is being used, but the technology is not being maximized. The kids can't see.
We would check that out with bond council and see if that would be acceptable expenditure.
This may go up on some of the schools, and we may have to figure something because we want the students to be able to learn using all that cool modern technology.
So we can find out if that's an acceptable expenditure, and then we can start cost, you know, get a cost and see what the cost would be.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any other questions? Any last thoughts? Thank you so much, Dr. Colvin.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being up there for an hour.
Oh, it didn't seem like an hour. It seemed like about 50 minutes.
Thank you.
It seemed like forever.
Okay, is there any, board of education discussion?
I just wanted to thank everybody who worked on the course outlines. And there were a number of parents on that group also that it looked like they put in a lot of time. And I appreciate the extra time you gave us to read them because it gave me a really great insight into what's happening and how we're trying to make advanced programs. But I just wanted to thank, since we didn't talk about it, thank everybody who put all of that work into it because you could tell there was so much work.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any other comments from the board? Okay. All right. March 12th is our next Board of Education meeting. There being no further business to come before the board, the regular meeting of February 26, 2013 is adjourned at 9:28.